When we see words like cryptocurrency and blockchain in the news, it often conjures up images of hackers in dark rooms with an array of keyboards and monitors aglow, working feverishly to steal our information, or server farms in the middle of nowhere sucking mountains of energy into the ether. And since the dawn of computing and early days of complex data networks, securing the transfer and storage of information has seen its fair share of thieves and hackers exploiting systems to their benefits. And then, in 2009, a mysterious white paper was written outlining the concept of using blockchain technology to secure monetary transactions and eliminate the need for centralized verification of those transactions. But over a decade after blockchain entered our lexicon, where it came from remains a mystery. Today in business, that technology is often used to secure millions of people's banking data, allow medical offices, both large and small, to secure confidential health records, and facilitate human resource departments across the globe with the ability to quickly manage the hiring and onboarding of seasonal workforces. Consumers, too, use blockchain and crypto technology to buy and trade commodities like soybeans and virtual cats. It's a complex idea with an endless array of uses, and on this episode of the CryptoCast from Chicago Crypto Capital, we look at the history of blockchain and the genesis of Bitcoin. Stay with us. Welcome to the first edition of CryptoCast with Chicago Crypto Capital. I'm Jeff Carlin, your amicable host and the man who has all the knowledge and info behind crypto capital and blockchain technology, Brian Amoah. Brian, how are you today?
I'm fine, Jeff. How are you?
Very well. And Brian, tell me a little bit about yourself so people listening know, you know, your credentials, because when I think crypto, I think Brian.
I'm the founder and managing partner of Chicago Crypto Capital. We are an advisory firm located here in Chicago with additional offices in New York City and Charlotte. We specialize in trading, advisory, and investment banking. We have a focus on early stage projects, mainly in the crypto and blockchain area.
And when you say early stages, I mean, people are looking at what crypto is or defining what a Bitcoin is. What do you usually tell people when they would ask you the first question? What is this?
Well, more than anything, it's a technology. Think of it as a software. So when we focus on early stage, or you're talking about all these projects, what you're really talking about is taking a new technology and apply it to many of the areas that could use a little bit more improvement. Any area that needs security or a way to store information or a way for a lot of people to look at data is taking a look at this. Think logistics, think communications, you could think retail, for instance.
For most people, they see Bitcoin, they think some sort of way of holding value, or maybe it's a way to spend, but it's really more, like you said, not about the physical coin, more about the technology that underlies that coin.
Yes, that's correct. I mean, Bitcoin is the earliest cryptocurrency, so that's the one most people associate it with.
It's essentially the Xerox. So yes. Everyone just says, oh, Bitcoin.
Bitcoin.
Reality, it's the blockchain behind it is really kind of what drives the ability to make a Bitcoin.
Yeah, of course. I mean, if you look at all technologies, I mean, the Model T Ford was a big car in the day, even though it wasn't the first car. We'll use this as the example. It's in the museum right now. You know, we kind of look at Bitcoin as far as its capabilities in the space. It's equivalent to that. Doesn't do much, but it's widely known.
And it was essentially a proof of concept, really, which I want to take us back to that. What really was the blockchain, or how it started?
Blockchain as a general technology has existed since 90s or so, early 90s. But what we tend to talk about is the decentralized form of this, which was first described in the white paper by an anonymous author named Satoshi Nakamoto. And in there, he described some of the problems with modern currency and saw what he felt were some solutions. If currency was decentralized, not controlled by one source, like a Federal Reserve, it couldn't be tampered with, transactions could be secure, and the whole network would be secure. So you wouldn't have things like forgery, things like theft. You could, in essence, deal with someone you didn't trust through a private network that no one else could really see. Now, you know, like I said, this technology was early and it didn't maybe accomplish all that he attempted to, but that's in essence where the idea started.
And that was around like 2009. So we're probably a decade into this, the mainstream idea of what Bitcoin is. And talk a little bit about how does that work?
So how that works is blockchain is, in essence, it's a ledger that you can only add on to. So every time a transaction occurs, it's added onto a ledger. And each one of these ledgers is called a block. So the blocks form a chain, one ledger after another, after another, after another. That is the whole network in which it works. So any individuals can make a transaction on this network. So say you and I, we go out to eat, I want to cover lunch, or you want to pay me back. You would record this ledger on the transaction, you and I, it would be recorded and it would go on and it would be distributed. Your balances would be changed on the network. My balances change on the network. It's stored on everyone's computers. They don't know who these people are, but the transaction goes forward. Now, how that works in the real world, you know, there's QR codes. Some of these are linked to debit cards. The most common way that these are typically sent are something called a private key and a public key. And I think we'll probably be talking about that in future podcasts. But there's a variety of ways that the actual transaction works.
And that idea that a ledger, I mean, to kind of put it in layman's terms, it's like you writing on your own little notebook, but then that notebook also has essentially a mirror of it on a thousand, a million, whatever it is, other notebooks saying that this person knocked it off, you know, knocked off this transaction or moved this block or this piece of information back and forth. And everybody gets a piece of that saying, hey, I saw that happened, right? I mean, that's the idea that it's a group security piece.
Correct. And that's really kind of what differentiates this between the ways we conduct business now. Right now, everything is in central. Your bank has your balance and then it's telling everyone else how much you have. And then people are sending, in essence, your transactions to your bank and then they're deducting it. And it's in this one spot. This is decentralized, like you said. You know, we do this transaction, but everybody stores this. So if I go ahead and tamper with my copy and say, hey, you know, Jeff sent me $1,000 for lunch instead of $100, everybody's going to, when it goes to merge the copies, everybody's going to have, you know, $10 you gave me for lunch, and it's going to reject yours. This mechanism is actually called consensus, and this is the kind of backing mechanism of cryptocurrency and blockchain, the idea that people have to agree that these transactions are valid and that they're going to be added to a ledger. And once everyone agrees to that, they can never be changed.
So as opposed to like a centralized bank where somebody, let's say, with a ski mask and some tools could go in and they could essentially hack into it physically, they could do damage to everybody's value.
Everybody's value.
Whereas in a crypto Bitcoin world, the individual would have to go to thousands of ledgers and essentially do all of them at once and figure out a way to do that, which is seemingly impossible.
Correct.
And the security there is not just in controlling financial records, but it also has other uses outside of finances.
We've seen this right now in logistics. They've been one of the quickest areas to pick this up because they are someone who is changing their balances, let's say, of some inventory. You're up and down, and sometimes by the depending on your business, the hour your inventory is changing with many different counterparties or other people trading with you. So you're seeing that this is a great solution for them. Everyone can relatively quickly verify that our balances are correct instead of maybe waiting to quarterly inventory or monthly inventory and find out, oh, you know what? We just lost X amount of pallets when it could have been found through blockchain in 10 minutes.
Speaking of that, I mean, I imagine a company like Amazon, just for an example, who has all these thousands and thousands of individual subcontractors distributing goods, who have their own goods, they have goods, they're trying to find that stuff. So the idea that all these people are now decentralized in their inventories because of something like a blockchain, because it allows that to happen.
Which is why we're seeing a heavy interest from a lot of the big players in this technology, because not to use as a currency for them to replace fiat, but a lot of these for internal uses to check their inventories, to check their accounts. Because of these transactions can never be altered, it gives you a bit of transparency and oversight that a lot of other options right now, and we're talking pure software options, don't give you.
Where do you see the future of it? Where do you see it 10 years from now?
Yeah, now this is always an interesting question. It's something we always like to kick off in the office. Now, you know, technology is an interesting thing. You can always see what's just over there around the horizon, but it's always hard to see what's in the future. We'll think about the internet. You know, even, let's say, right around 2000, when it was getting a lot of hype around the internet, and people had crazy ideas left and right. That was a fraction of the capability of the internet, what it turned out to. I would have never fathomed the capabilities I have in my cell phone, you know, even at 2000, even when people were throwing money at that. It's very hard to see what the actual, you know, the cell phone equivalent, just complete game breaker of, I guess, manifestation of this technology is. But in the near future, I think we're going to look at areas, anyone who needs security, speed, and transparency in a data network, whether that be currencies, and that could be governments or institutions that are just trying to tokenize assets, let's say a real estate property, not for the private networks, but they're looking to do that because blockchain gives them transparency. So we're going to see a lot of non-traditional players enter into this market doing non-traditional things. I know that's not the exciting thing that you were probably hoping for, but you know,
we're not flying to the moon on this technology.
No, I mean, well, maybe eventually, but with most technologies, you know, usually the money people run to it, and you know, maybe the criminals or those are going to be the early adopters. But eventually, then you're going to get to big business is going to adopt it, and then maybe ultimately retail.
Well, I think that gives us a pretty good primer on cryptocurrencies and where Bitcoin started and where the future hopefully is. Brian, thanks so much. Where can we find out more?
Yeah, if you want to find out more, go ahead and check out our website. It's www.chicagocryptocapital.com. A lot of good information in there, and shoot us a message if you have any questions.
Yeah, we'd be happy to answer them. Well, until next time, I'm Jeff Carlin.
Brian Amoah.
And this is another edition of CryptoCast from Chicago Crypto Capital. Talk to you next time.